Okay, good afternoon to all of you. I assume some of you will be eating while I'm talking, which is perfectly all right. And we're going to use some time to, I'm going to say some brief introductory remarks, after which I would entertain some particular concerns of yours, some out of your own experience of how we might best manage time and so forth. Now, in talking about time, my mind immediately flips to the joke file, which is Ken Ferber, in action, no. Have you ever heard the story about the family? They hadn't gone to church for a long time, and they came to church, and the little boy, of course, he was really unused to going to church. And so as they went through the narthex of the church on the way out, the boy, little boy asked the pastor, he says, "What's the list of all those names on that on this plaque back here in the back?" And the guy said, "Well, those are members of the congregation who have served in the armed forces." And he said, "Well, okay." He said, "What are the stars in the back of their names?" And he said, "Well," the pastor said, that means they died in the service." And the little boy said, "Which one, the 8 o'clock or the 10:30? That's the kind, guys, you can tell to your lady's aid. The seminary student who was not a very good manager of his time went out on call to his first parish, and he had to give a speech to the women's guild. And so he memorized it, but he had to memorize it hurriedly. So it came time, the whole room, as large as this, in the basement of the church, all filled, and this fellow was introduced, and he became the first speaker. And so to begin his presentation, being rather nervous, he said, "Behold, I come." And his mind went blank. Couldn't think of a single thing. And so he said again, knowing what he had been taught, that sometimes if you memorize something, you can begin again, it'll come back to you. He said, "Behold, I come." He still couldn't remember it. He was really getting nervous by this time, but the third time's the charm, right? And he said, "Behold, I come." With that, he fell off the stage and fell in the lady's lap. And he was getting up, and he was brushing her off and himself off and really apologizing to her because he felt so bad that he had ruffled her all up and had fallen off the stage and forgotten his speech and a number of other things. And she says, "Oh, that's all right. You don't need to apologize. You warned me three times." Repetition helps. All right, time. When we think of time, this was very frustrating for me when I entered the parish. It could be for you, but I hope that today I can give you a few guidelines that might help. I wanted to build Rome in a day. I was filled with education up to here, and it was time for me to, quote, get busy. And so I wanted to do everything, and I wanted to do it absolutely perfect and well. And I worked night and day to make sure that that could be accomplished. And if you work night and day, then your family falls apart. You can't be a father, and you can't be a husband. In fact, you'll find out that you can't even be yourself if you work like that. So the first thing that happened to me in terms of time management that was of help was to get my own priorities straight. Now, you've heard that a million times, and we all intellectually know in what order they could come. But how and in what order would you put these four things? Yourself, husband, pastor, father. What order would you put them in? Just think about that for a minute. Should husband be first? Should pastor be first? Should you be first? Contrary to what we often think about, should your responsibility to any children you might have be first? After coming to grips with this, and Dave Schuler was the one who helped me do it in a retreat setting, was to see that first of all, I had to be responsible to myself and to take care of myself. And I think that in dealing with time management, you should see yourself as priority number one in this respect, that you have your spiritual life squared away with your Lord, that you have your physical health taken care of, that you are exercising so that you can work at your optimum, etc. But you take care of yourself, right? Because if you don't really take care of yourself, how can you be what I consider to be number two, which is a husband? I can't really be a good husband to my wife, Kathy, unless I'm in good order, right? Number three, she and I together have made a lifetime commitment to raise three children. I am a father. And number four, I am a pastor. And I think as you look at the scriptures, what are one of the qualifications that are listed there when it says husband and one wife and so forth, but a manager, one who manages his own household well. In other words, you have to be a good father before you can be a good pastor. You have to be a good husband before you can be a good pastor. And you have to take care of yourself. Having set those things in order, I began to get a little bit of a glimpse of how to manage my time, because at least I knew what areas to work in. However, that still was not a great help to me in answering larger concerns. And so it came some years later when I became so frustrated that I didn't know what to do with myself anymore that I sat down with a man whose name is Wes Glatto. He's a layman. He came from the Midwest, moved to Oregon, and organized from scratch Salem Heating and Air Conditioning Company, which is a rather large company today. And in talking with him one day, and I believe God directed this whole conversation between the two of us, I shared with him the frustration that I was having in ministry, in that I could never accomplish the things I wanted to accomplish, and I never knew whether my job was done. Do you often feel that way as a student too? You never know when quitting time is. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody would just tell you that at 10 o'clock at night, that's it. Nothing more is required of you. I think we yearn for that. You will really yearn for that in the parish. You wish somebody would just say, you don't have to work anymore this afternoon. Well, no one's ever going to tell you that. In fact, they will keep infringing upon your time and take more and more of it away from you. And finally, what can happen then is that beautiful, positive spirit that you left the seminary with will turn out to be a negative spirit, wherein you will look upon people as problems rather than as the real joys that God meant them to be in your life. Don't let that happen to you. And you can help yourself by working at managing your time. Now, I think a very simple exercise would be helpful, and that is if you go to your first parish or if you go on vicarage, whatever it is, the first thing you have to do is determine what you have to do. You have to figure out what the job is. It is important to know what your job is. Is your job to do everything in the parish all by yourself? Is that what your job is? Assuming you're going to your first parish, are you the one who is responsible for all of social ministry, for the board of elders, and for the board of stewardship, and the board of church property, and the board of evangelism, and you go on and on? Are you going to take care of all of that? Are you going to develop programs for every single area of that? and do it all in the first year? What are you going to do with the person, for instance, who comes to you and says, after you have just worked 2 weeks, 3 weeks, really slaved, you feel all down, you wish you had a day off, and somebody comes up to you on Saturday morning and says, Pastor, we know that you've been working hard, but you haven't done anything with the youth program. When are you going to get started on that? Do you see what I mean? You can really get frustrated, but determine what you have to do. Now, when Wes told me, tell me exactly what you have to do, I had to do some rethinking. And the first thing that I did is I went back to the call that I received and to look at the call and to see exactly what I was called to do there. And these were the main areas that we came up with. Calling. I was called to do calling, visitation work in the parish, to visit people who were sick, who were shut-ins, etc. I was, number two, called to teach. It very specifically mentioned that I was to teach both young and old in the Christian faith. It mentioned, number three, that I was responsible, and this is not on that regular form that CPH prints out by the 10,000s, but in an appended letter, that I was to be responsible for counseling in the parish. The old CPH forms don't even list that. But the new, many congregations are conscious of that particular area. Okay, number four was administration. I was specifically called to be the executive pastor in that congregation, and that involves some administrative responsibilities. And then number four, and this is not written in your call, and this is the part many people forget about, is preparation and study. You need time for preparation and study and worship and prayer for yourself. Now, many times they feel, and by they I mean congregations, members have the idea that if you've gone to school for 4 years here, you've obviously had enough preparation and worship and study. Why do you have to do any more? You should just be able to wing it forever. In fact, some pastors very easily get this idea early in their ministry, don't they? I think I'll just wing it. And I can tell you right now what will happen the very first time that you wing a sermon. Do you know what's going to happen? It's going to be the best sermon you ever preached in your life, and people will congratulate you. It's honest truth. You just try it once. Go unprepared. It will be the best ones. Trick of the devil. Happens to everybody. And it's very easy at that point to say, well, this is easier than I thought. I'll just always go unprepared. It's a trick of the devil. I say that because it's just like the bowler who has never bowled before. My father was one of those. We took him to Florida, happened to fall into a bowling alley by accident, asked him to bowl. He had never seen a bowling ball. He didn't even know what direction it was supposed to go in. How good usually is a beginning bowler? Very good. It's the second game that all the balls go into the gutter, right? And it's many times that way too, I think, in terms of the parish. But these were the five areas then. Now, if these are the main areas and a lot of things come under each one, how are you going to make sure that you get those all done so that you don't have to have that frustration every week or when quitting time comes? And so Wes showed me how I could take a week's activities, and what I did is I put them on a little card like this. I had my day divided into three areas. There was the morning, the afternoon, and the evening. Now, this is really original. And there were 6 days out of the week that I worked. This was a rather mutual agreement that we had with the parish that there would be one day off. I would insist on a day off, if I were you, at least one. And that day off that I chose was on Friday. I chose Friday because that was a day that I could be with my children later in the evening, and they wouldn't have to get up in the morning to go to school. And so Fridays became my day off. Saturday is not a good day off for a preacher, and Sunday's a little tough too. So what I did is divided those three areas and then filled out the week so that I had time for each of these. Now, this happens to be the way my week went on Mondays. Well, let's start with Sunday. All right. Sunday morning, obviously, you have what? Worship and Bible class. Sunday afternoon for me was a catch-up time. You know all those odds and ends that come along? After church on Sunday, what I would do is go into my office. I would take things that I would notice that were kind of odds and ends, confirmation tests that had to be corrected, etc., throw them in a briefcase and take them home. Now, being a great lover of football, it generally did not take me long to get all those catch-up work items done because I wanted to watch football. And so I'd hurry up and do all of those things, and that was my catch-up afternoon. And then on Sunday evening, we had worship because there was another worship service in the evening. Those were the Sunday times. Monday morning was set aside for administration. There comes a time where you have to answer letters. And you'll get all kinds of letters from all kinds of people. The seminary will bug you because you're an alumnus. You know, some other school's going to bug you because you're an alumnus. Somebody's mother-in-law is hurting bad and they want to write and ask you for advice, and you're going to have these letters. Now, all letters for me were answered on Monday morning. If I got a letter on Thursday, it waited till Monday. Monday morning was the time that I made sure that I got all this work taken care of. Monday afternoon was preparation time. This is when I began to do preparation for all of the coming week's events. I knew, for instance, that there was going to be a meeting on Tuesday evening. That was my time to prepare a devotion. I knew there was going to be confirmation class on Wednesday night. That was my time to prepare for confirmation class. I knew that there was going to be a Sunday service, two Sunday services, two sermons coming up before the end of the week. This is the time to start to prepare. And if you do it early in the week, you see, then you can use all of that driving time to the hospitals and other places for what? Rather than daydreaming, that's time that you can use to prepare. You don't have to have all your books out in front of you to prepare for a sermon. Sometimes you need reflection time, right? And you can do that while you're driving. Many sermons were put together that way, at least so that it was all clear in my mind, so that when I went back to the desk, I could actually do some productive work. In order to do that, I would sometimes hide on Monday afternoons. I'd go pile stuff in my car, and I would go to a park south of town and sit in my car. Nobody knew where I was at. They just knew I was working. And I was. Monday night was adult instruction class. That was a joyful evening. We always spent the whole evening. It was two and a half hours together. And we would have two classes a year, so sometimes three. This was adult instruction evening. And then on Tuesday mornings, in fact, and this would be unique to the parish where I was at the last parish, Tuesday mornings and Tuesday afternoons were staff time for me. I met with everybody. As the pastor of the congregation, I thought everybody who was on the staff of the parish had a right to have time with me. For instance, the kindergarten teacher, it was a half day that she taught kindergarten. She knew that every week she had 1 hour with the pastor. Sometimes we'd just talk about she had trouble with her dog. If that was a big thing on her mind, that's okay. At least she knew she always had a chance to talk to me. I talk to the janitor every week. Don't forget. Very important. You have a good relationship with him. You don't have to worry about a lot of things not being taken care of. Met with the other pastors, with the ministers of education, with the vicar, etc. All these people. And then at the end of the afternoon, we'd always eat lunch together on that day, brown bag it. Then at the end of that afternoon, we would have a complete meeting where everybody was together. And that was for purposes of coordination and communication, so that everybody knew what everybody was doing for the rest of the week. And then Tuesday evening was meetings. So you can see Tuesday was a day for me to sit. I sat all day through all these meetings, working with the staff and having administrative meetings in the evening. Now, on Wednesday was Wednesday morning Bible class from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, but both before the class and after the class was administration time for me again. It was time to do some of those things that I didn't get done on Monday morning. Wednesday afternoon was appointments. This was very helpful to me. People would call in. They'd call my secretary, and they would say, we'd like to see Pastor Hempelman sometime this week. And she would say, would you like to see him Wednesday afternoon or Saturday morning? Oh, I'd say, Wednesday afternoon. She'd say, okay, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, both times are open. Do you see what she's doing, though? She's narrowing it down. I had Wednesday afternoons and Saturday mornings that I took appointments. As soon as somebody said, could I have an appointment, they didn't argue about yes or no. But she gave them the option of two times. At that point, they forgot about their problem, and they were deciding about what? Which option to take. You'll get a lot of people who say, I have to see Pastor right now. Or they'll tell you that. I have to see you right now. They don't really. In fact, if they wait until tomorrow, the problem will probably be half taken care of. But you do need to give people the options, right? So that they know. And that way you can schedule your time too. Okay, then on Wednesday evening was weekday school. And on Wednesday evenings, obviously during Advent and Lent, we would have Wednesday evening services. Then Thursday morning was call time. That was a time that I could go calling on shut-ins. I could call on members of the congregation who were retired and so forth and were at home during the day. Thursday afternoon was study time. You see that I've got my study time separated so that, and many times on Thursday afternoons, I'd sit and read interpretation or the Concordia Journal, periodicals like that. Sometimes I'd just read a book that I was interested in reading. Sometimes I'd just sit with a Bible and read it for meditative purposes in the afternoon. Thursday evening was call time again, to go calling, because you can't call on all kinds of people during the day. Friday was off all day. Pull the plug on everything. Saturday mornings, I already told you, is appointment time. Saturday afternoon was calling time, where I could go out and call. Saturday evening was final preparation for everything for Sunday. Now, what this allowed me to do, and this sounds rather structured, I think, at first glance, what this allowed me to do was when the week was over, I could look back and say, did I cover all of the areas to which I was called? And I would at least have the satisfaction of saying, I didn't get everything done. However, I worked in all of the areas. There were times on Wednesday afternoons, for instance, maybe there were only two appointments. I would joyfully get in my car without any explanation to anyone, and I would go home and play with the kids. That's fine. That was my time. Supper time was always, or you may call it dinner, was always an important time with my family. I choose one of the children to be with them during the evening time. As soon as I get home, I used to have the idea that when I went home at night for the evening meal, that was time to rest and relax. Now I see it as a time to work. To work as a father. And as soon as I walk into the door, if there are any of the children that are available, they get my undivided attention. It's not the time to read the paper. If I read the paper, I read it at night after 11 o'clock. But my children get my time. Noontime, I'm very jealous about noontime meals too, because noontime meals are for my wife and I. And we always spend them together. It's a rare exception that we don't. So I think you've caught the pattern. It's a very simple one, but it allows you the freedom to be able to do some choosing. And then to realize, once you set up some kind of a goal like this, that it's your guide, and you have the right to change it anytime you want. What became very helpful to me was that I was able to go to the Board of Elders, for instance, and I would tell them how I used my time, and I would ask them for their suggestions. They became my advisors in that way. And they knew what I was doing with my time. That's all they wanted to do, is know that I was using my time. That answers a lot of questions for them. Right? Now, let's entertain some concerns that you might have. You are? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I agree with that. I agree that in our life there is nothing more important than our relationship with Jesus Christ. And I don't want what I said misunderstood in saying that that does not come first. I'm talking about setting up, however, in dealing with other people, that you have to be together yourself before you can help others. I think Paul makes that very clear when he says, don't come into one of God's churches with yourself not put together. And he lists what it means to be together. It means not having more than one wife. It means being able to teach. It means being able to preach. It means to be able to manage. One who is not concerned only about money and alcohol. But yet I would agree that Jesus and our relationship to him obviously is the very first priority in our life. Between them and other people? Yeah, well, that's really unfortunate. I agree with you that happens. It's the very thing that should cement that relationship. That's why I mentioned a while ago, if you're really together spiritually yourself, that's when you can be of help to other people. That's when you can make a good hospital call. There was somebody here. Yes. Okay, I'll just tell you what happened in my life, and that was at the beginning. I would have to spend a good 10 hours on my sermons when I began the ministry. That time will decrease over a period of years. You give yourself 10 or 12 years, and you will be able to write a sermon in 3-4 hours and do a very good job of it. Very good. Well, no, but I don't think that you'll have this big a parish either. And you probably won't have a Wednesday morning Bible class. You won't have a whole 8 hours a week to spend with staff when you begin. And so you'll have that time. Just block it in. Block in a little bit more. The thing to be conscious of is that you always evaluate how you're using your time, and maybe what you use in preparation time this year, you won't need all of that next year. Give yourself the freedom to move that. There was a question over here. Yeah. The first thing to do, I believe, is that if Friday is your day off and you're going to take your kids fishing, then make sure that you do that. You just get up early and pile them in the car and leave, and nobody's going to get a hold of you. Number two, if you're still home and the lady calls, she comes first. You called it an emergency, and that's exactly what it is. Your children will recognize that. They'll be happy to live with it. You don't have to spend all day with that lady. In fact, it'd be better probably if you didn't. But you should minister to her as her pastor. And do it slowly and give her plenty of time. And then come back and take your children out, and God will take the time that you have left with your children, and he'll multiply it. He'll make it a little bit longer. He always has a way of doing that. Mike? No, I really didn't face that problem. People knew that I was home every lunch. They also knew that I was home in the evening. I think that if you tell people that you may be reached any morning in your office, they may call you there, they will respect and do that. People really do not want to call you at inopportune times. I think some pastors, frankly, bring it upon themselves when they meet somebody on the street or on a phone or something like that, and they say, well, when can I get a hold of you? And the pastor says, well, I don't really know what I'm going to do for the rest of the day. I don't know when I'm going to be in. Obviously, when are the people going to have to call you then? They're going to have to try to catch you at supper time. It was a very rare occasion that we had calls in our home. I think Jim can attest to that. He was in our home. In fact, it was to the point that I never went and answered the phone. I still don't. I let somebody else answer it because it's generally always for them. Because people knew when to get a hold of me. See? They always knew. They were starting to come. And you want those to come. We used to do that with family devotions. People would call, Board of Elders chairman, he would call, or somebody. And I'd just say, we're having family devotions, Vern. I'll call you back in 3 minutes. Hang up. Okay, as far as my, and this is very hurried now, seeing the time, but my personal devotional life began immediately when I get out of bed. I use shaving time for devotions for my own personal self. This is ex corde prayer times with my Lord. But the real devotional time, what I considered more meditative time, began a half hour before I went to work. I would go to church, and I would sit in the front pew on the right-hand side. I don't know why I did that, but that was always my place. And there I would use Doberstein's book as a guide. And I had a half an hour every morning before work. If the phone would ring way back in the back of the church, I never answered it. That was my time for prayer. Sometimes I would move from there up to the altar and kneel at the altar and be there for a while. After that, noon times. That's the reason Kathy and I like to have our noon times together, is because we can talk to one another, and we can also talk about our spiritual life together. We can use that as a time for mutual sharing in Christ. The evening time, right after our evening meal, we always have family devotions. And this I never got the privilege of being in on, but before each child goes to bed, a story is read to them in a prayer time with my wife. Okay, now sometimes you have to give yourself 3-4 years to really analyze a parish and maybe guide it to a direction where you don't have to have all those meetings. If the meetings are really productive, of course you need them. There are ways of consolidating meetings is one thing. For instance, we had all of our boards and committees meet on one night. Right there takes care of a big problem, because that means you obviously can't be at 9 of them at one time. So you just pick out the ones where you absolutely have to be. The other one is, however, training your lay leaders well. Spend $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a year, whatever it takes. Make sure they get good training in their jobs. That'll take a big responsibility off of you. They'll finally get to the point where they don't want you there. You'll have to swallow that too. They'll say, well, Pastor, why don't you just talk to me individually? We don't have time for that at the meeting. Right? If you give people authority, then you have to let them run with it, right? I had devotional articles for the shofar, which was our monthly communication piece, rejected. That's right. You have to learn to live with that. Now, if you're going to call back and say, but I'm the pastor of this parish, and you put my devotional article in there, then you don't need an editor anymore. Then you are the editor. That doesn't mean I agreed with her. to have a woman turn down your devotional article? Sorry about that, John. Okay, any other concerns? I thank you very much. I think we owe it to our Lord to have good management of time so that we can be the most effective workers in His kingdom. And it makes you a lot happier. It brings a lot more joy to your ministry. It was a joy to be with you today, too, and to have this time with you.
We're going to get out of here on time. Just one announcement. BR asked if he could have just a few minutes to share with you today about an exciting opportunity for ministry, for good stewardship of our time in furthering God's kingdom here. BR, I'll just let you finish up here, and then we can go after he's done sharing the things he has to share with you.